You're listening to a Journal Watch podcast called Clinical Conversations. It's for the week of June 26. I'm Joe Elia. Call us at 1-617-440-4374 with suggestions, or write to jelia@nejm.org. This week's conversation is with Ileana Losina. She has some interesting findings on the cost-effectiveness of total knee arthroplasty in the latest archives of internal medicine. A look at the other clinical news first, in our shortened format. If you're interested in further details, they're all available in Physicians First Watch or by following the links on the website, podcasts.jwatch.org. First, this week, the CDC reminds you to offer HIV testing to high schoolers, a group that harbors a disproportionately large number of undiagnosed HIV infections. Next, fibrinolysis after STEMI should be followed up with rapid transfer and angiography, according to the New England Journal of Medicine. Next, bone densitometry in the first 3 years of bisphosphonate therapy is a waste of time and resources. Finally, about 1 in 20 abnormal test results are never conveyed to the patient. What could be the cause of that? I'm guessing the billing is neglected too? Now, on to the interview. Earlier this week, Archives of Internal Medicine published a cost-effectiveness analysis of total knee arthroplasty. According to the author's analysis of Medicare claims data, the procedure increased quality-adjusted life expectancy by a full year and at a cost-effectiveness ratio of some $18,000. Ileana Losina, the first author, has agreed to talk with us about her team's findings. She is in the Center for Outcomes Research in the Department of Orthopedic Surgery at Brigham and Women's Hospital, Boston. Thank you for talking with us today, Dr. Losina.
It's a pleasure and an honor. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, the honor's ours. The cost-effectiveness in your study varied by hospital volume, but even in hospitals with rather low volumes, I think fewer than, 25 procedures per year, the numbers still favor doing the procedure. Is that right?
That's correct.
Am I misinterpreting something, or does the paper say or imply that the procedure adds a year of life, or is that a year of quality-adjusted life?
This is a year of quality-adjusted life. Let's be very clear. Knee osteoarthritis, as disabling as it is, it's not considered a very morbid condition. It doesn't lead to premature death, but it definitely does lead to loss of mobility and being confined to a wheelchair, and really affect quality of life, because it's not whether people are alive or dead or what people can do. And that's where the measure of quality, not just the quantity of life, becomes very important. In fact, in many analyses that we're seeing, it's the only differentiation we're making is whether the person is alive or dead. Mm-hmm. But as you can imagine, the year of life of a 25-year-old person who is doing tons of activities, sports, social, dating, marrying, having kids, and feeling no limitations probably is not exactly the same if we try to quantify as a year of life somebody who is confined to bed.
Right.
And that's where the quality of life comes to help to differentiate the self-perception of the value of life in a given year to a person with certain conditions.
I see. And so the people given total knee arthroplasty are not going to get up and start dating necessarily.
Oh, absolutely. They may, and that may improve their how they feel about their life.
Absolutely.
Because now they can go talk and walk and go to dance with their partner, and they perhaps couldn't do it before and felt horrible about it.
What could drive the costs upward? And let's talk a little bit about the background of cost effectiveness ratios. Now, I know that, say, in hemodialysis, that's set at something on the order of, I'm just searching my memory here, at about $30,000 per quality adjusted life year. Is that right?
Well, I think it was about $50,000 for quality-adjusted life year, again, many, many, many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
As everything in life, as the time goes on, everything gets only more expensive, unlike the less expensive. So the quality, the cost effectiveness of dialysis for end-stage renal disease now, I think, on a magnitude of $120,000 per quality adjusted year of life gain. So if that is considered, if that is considered to be a threshold, then compared to that, cost effectiveness of knee arthroplasty is much, much better. So the cost effectiveness ratio is much lower.
Is it the case now that any procedure that's going to go before a board for, say, Medicare reimbursement, is the top threshold now dialysis, or is it at some lower point?
Well, let's differentiate those two parts. I don't think the cost effectiveness should be or ever will be the major decision maker or deal breaker whether to pay for something or not. Deciding whether to cover something or not is the multitude should be considered, considering a multitude of factors, and cost effectiveness is one of them, but not the one. So that should be very, very clear. We're not talking about cost effectiveness being the only factor that should make the decision about what to cover. Yeah. It's really a combination of efficacy, ethical considerations, and overall spectrum of what's important and how much benefits certain procedures provide. And somewhere down the road, it's also budgetary considerations too. Do we have, just because something is cost effective does not mean that we can pay for it.
Yes.
Because, for example, a very simple example is it maybe can be shown that BMW is very cost effective compared to some other cars.
Mm-hmm.
But that does not mean that we should advise everybody to get it. Right. So it's one of the components of our knowledge that this will build into our decision maker making, but I don't think it should be the only part of the decision making process. With respect to thresholds, what I like to do is really to look at more how the world views the cost effectiveness thresholds. And in the rest of the world, I think we're trying to use WHO proposed thresholds, which is the related to per capita gross domestic product. And so in many countries, as you can imagine, the gross domestic product is different, so the cost effectiveness ratio is different. So that's why what is cost effective in United States may not be as cost effective in South Africa or India. And if we, so what WHO suggest is that any medical intervention with cost effectiveness ratio of less than 3 times gross domestic product per capita, of course, is considered cost effective, and less than 1 time per capita gross domestic product considered to be very cost effective. So the last time I checked, the gross domestic product in the United States was about $44,000 per person. So if that is the threshold, then total knee replacement is definitely very cost effective. If we continue to use the cost effectiveness of dialysis, which is on a kind of lower hundreds right now, then it's still considered very cost effective. So I think it's really important not to tie to a single number, but to look at it in perspective. And if the cost effectiveness of procedure is robust across multiple thresholds, I think it suggests that it's really cost-effective procedure. If it's wiggles or changes depending on the variation in certain parameters, then I think what it shows that the cost-effectiveness really depends on certain factors that need to be understood better and examined more.
Okay. And so it's not only the number, but the number is a kind of a rough guide to, is this feasible?
I would say so, that the cost of the threshold should be, so many procedures now is being compared to less than $100,000 per quality adjusted year of life gain as a threshold for cost effectiveness, but it's way above. So the old canonical number of $50,000, which was referred to dialysis, I think is well overdue because it's really dated by now. And I think if the goal is really to tie to dialysis, that needs to be around $120,000 per quality adjusted life year. And again, the goal is to use the quality adjustment is because it really helps to compare procedures across different conditions. For example, if we would look for cancer treatments, obviously cancer treatments do prolong life. Mm-hmm. And so they help more to extend life and help, obviously, to improve life. Things like total knee replacement in many cases improves life, but perhaps may not necessarily extend it. So that's why it's really important to compare them on the same matrix, which is the quality-adjusted life expectancy rather than life expectancy.
Is there a resource in this country that lists procedures and those cost-effectiveness numbers?
Yes, there is a repository of cost-effectiveness studies with cost-effectiveness ratios, which is now, I think, being maintained at Tufts or New England Medical Center, and is led by Peter Newman, which really, it's a continuous effort to keep it updated, all the studies looking at cost-effectiveness of various procedures, and it's a very helpful resource.
Good. I will try to put the URL for that on the website, on podcasts.jwatch.org, so that listeners can link to it. And you were talking about the aging of the dialysis numbers, and I don't want to spend too much time on dialysis because actually your paper is on total knee arthroplasty. But when do you think that how often do you think that those numbers, those cost effectiveness numbers, should be revisited?
I feel that people who perform cost-effectiveness analysis, they really focus on comparative values, and I don't think they kind of tying it to the specific numbers. What I think the $50,000 per quality-adjusted life years gain is mostly quoted to people or by people who are doing the cost-effectiveness analysis once in their career, and kind of they feel that this is the firm threshold. I think revisiting or kind of looking at various sources or thresholds, I think that would be useful every time somebody is conducting such an analysis. But again, I don't think there is a canonical threshold. I think currently interventions below 100,000 considered to be cost effective in the United States. Again, if you're using the WHO threshold, you can go a little bit higher.
Those numbers can change rapidly, can't they? If people, for instance, took your numbers and said, you know, gee, we haven't been doing so well in our practice. Why don't we just set up a knee arthroplasty center? Knowing that you could have a rash of total knee replacements, and the quality could start going down if people weren't careful. I'm not trying to accuse anyone of anything, but there's a kind of industrialization of medicine happening. Is medicine at risk for suffering, and are those numbers at risk for declining if that's the case?
Well, you raised several interesting points. I don't think, if anything, that I'm hearing that surgeons actually concern about the boundary of reimbursement for total knee replacement, and their concern is while all expenses grow, reimbursement does not grow. So I think they're really raising the concerns that they really feel the limit in reimbursement. I don't think, maybe I'm an idealistic person, I think physicians, you know, have their call of duty much above and beyond just how much it costs. And in terms of industrialization of medicine, I don't think that primary care physician will turn to be an orthopedic surgeon overnight just because
true.
The reimbursements are better.
Right.
I think everybody made their decision in some ways, and I hope that they love what they're doing.
Yeah.
I think the reimbursement in medicine may undergo certain changes and revisions in terms of how it's all going to work as the life expectancy of population in our country is increasing,
mm-hmm.
thanks to our medicine and all
yes.
the medical advances. And I think the healthcare costs are very, very high, so that I could imagine that there will be some potential revisions. But I think that physicians will still be very respected in the society, and I think, you know, they will be happy with what they do and how they can help people, because I don't think it should be only about dollars. But obviously compensation is important because they work hard and they spend a lot of years in training. So I think it will be a combination, and we'll come to a satisfactory resolution. But I'm not concerned that physicians will turn their specialty based on where they can get more reimbursement. I think they're making decisions earlier.
You would think so, except you've probably read Atul Gawande's article in The New Yorker in the June 1st edition, where primary care clinicians in Texas, in that small town in Texas, started down the industrialization path and started doing things on a much larger scale, and as a result are the second, have per capita the second highest Medicare reimbursements in the country.
I've seen this, but as again, this is the individual cases, and I think, you know, people experiment different ways, but ultimately, I don't think the cost-effectiveness analysis will help to physicians to figure out, you know, where to move and what to do, but I can't exclude the possibility that somebody will try to experiment. There are some hospitals that are trying to become boutique hospitals that provide only specialty care, and there are some hospitals that are not very many that are, I think, owned by physicians. But I think in general, the study has been done just to really to address the issue that many times the amount of dollars that is being spent in total knee replacement is quite large. It's about $11 billion. Annually, and so the question, the study was done really just to say, is it a good value for money that we spend? And what we showed that it's a really good value for money. So I think it's not that we did not study the new procedure. We really said that this is a very effective procedure. It helps many people to improve their quality of life. It's cost effective, and the concern that we also try to address is that there had been a volume of research suggesting that outcomes in higher volume centers are better than in lower volume centers. Mm-hmm. But what we do need to recognize that United States is a very large country, and more than 3,000 hospitals around the country perform total knee replacements, and about 40% of them are low volume centers. And really, we don't want to translate the findings that outcomes are better than the low-volume hospitals. What they're doing is totally not good, or the outcomes are not cost-effective. I think what we showed is that if you compare no surgery to surgery, even at low-volume center, the total knee replacement, even in low-volume center, provides a very good value for money and provides very good benefits.
And in fact, in patients at highest risk for surgical complications, even when those are done at the high volume centers, the cost effectiveness numbers go way up. In other words, it's less relatively cost effective. But of course, those are very complicated cases.
Yes. Well, the story behind this is more or less straightforward. It's not just the cases are complicated. But what happens is that sometimes, in order to get to regional or center excellence or high or academic center, patients need to travel far, and because they live in rural areas or small towns, and if they need to travel far and they have a lot of comorbidities and considered to be high-risk patients, what surgeons tend to suggest that the high-risk patients who travel far to go to high-volume centers, they're more likely to be placed in the inpatient rehab after the surgery.
Oh,
and that's what makes the That's what drives the cost for those people and for those procedures, because we really try to incorporate all costs related to total knee replacement. So that's why for high-risk patients, doing the procedure in Maine, we consider three groups of hospitals according to volume: low volume, medium volume, and high volume center. And again, in this country, there is not that many hospitals that are considered to be high volume centers. They're doing about 20% of procedures, but the number of hospitals is not that huge. So it's hard and it's impossible to imagine that everybody would go to highest possible volume center. And that's why what we said is that even if they go to medium volume center, they would provide a nice value. They would get, because the outcomes are excellent and the adverse outcomes are relatively rare. It's only a range of 1-4%, and that's when we talk about worse outcomes in low-volume centers, then it gets from 1% to 4%, but more than 90% of people doing quite well.
The message of your paper, then, is one of reassurance, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. It's reassurance that this is this is to reassure that the expenditure for total knee replacement is a very justified expenditure because it's a very good procedure. We know for years that it has been very efficacious. You know, people doing much, much better, vast majority doing much better. And that the concern was that it's the costs are quite high and you have to pay cost up front.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to take up any more of your time, Dr. Losina. I want to thank you very much for your time this morning.
It has been a pleasure. And again, you ask very good questions, and I was glad that I was able to talk about the subject because I think this is a very important area that we should talk more about, cost-effectiveness of medicine and effectiveness of medicine.
I've put links for Peter Newman's cost-effectiveness registry on the website, which is podcasts.jwatch.org. The registry website, in case you can't wait, is www.cearegistry.org. We're all ears at 1-617-440-4374, so give us a ring or drop me a note at jelia@nejm.org. Clinical Conversations executive producer is Adore Yano. I'm Joe Elia. Join us next week. Enough said.